Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. You know, I'm happy to be with you on the afternoon drive. And today, we're going to play a best of edition of the show. We've had a couple of segments, more than a couple. We've had quite a few segments over the last few weeks that have just been a lot of fun. And today, I want to go over one of those, a couple of them actually. Steve Bordstein, great friend of mine. From Fox Sports in Farmington, New Mexico, joins us periodically here on the show. We had a conversation surrounding the life of Bill Buckner. Now, Bill Buckner sadly passed away earlier this week after a fight with dementia. I feel like Bill Buckner is one of the most unfairly labeled athletes in baseball, if not all of sports. This guy was really good. And you know, all anyone ever sees is the 1986 World Series, the year at first base. This guy was historically good early on in his career with the Dodgers and the Cubs, and so we will talk about that and also other athletes that have been labeled because of one mishap out of the playing field. I will also talk to Michael Cranish. Michael Cranish is the author of the new book, The World's Fastest Man, The Extraordinary Life of Cyclist Major Taylor. Major Taylor is America's first black sports hero in the field of cycling. So if you like cycling or if you're unaware of Major Taylor, I'm telling you, this was a fantastic segment. The book has been a terrific read. And we'll also talk local sports. So we were recently joined by Coach Eric Nielsen of the Emory High School track and field team as the spring sports schedule came to an end. So a best of edition of Drive Time Sports. It's coming up here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Steve Bordstein talking Bill Buckner. Michael Cranish will talk Major Taylor. And Eric Nielsen talking Emory High School. It's Drive Time Sports from the Auto Forum Studios when we return.
Summer is just around the corner, and Sutherland's has everything you need. After you mow the lawn, trim the hedges, and till your garden, where do you put all that stuff? Compliment the hard work you put into your lawn or garden with a new storage shed from Sutherland's. Our build-it-yourself shed kits come in a variety of sizes and styles at prices you can't turn down. Plus, with any shed purchase, you'll receive a free $50 promo card. See store for details. Sutherland's, helping you build it better.
Accounting, agribusiness, business administration.
USU Eastern now offers 24 bachelor degree programs right here at our local campus.
English teaching, elementary education, family life studies, health education and promotion, history, human development and family studies, liberal arts, management information systems, marketing, mathematics education, psychology, recreation resource management.
Visit usueastern.edu for more information. USU Eastern, small enough to care, big enough to get you places.
Once upon a time, there was a sleepy bear in search of a place to nap. Like the inside of a car. A coupe? Too small. An SUV? Too big. A station wagon? Just right. But as his eyelids began to get heavy... Covered it. September 30th, 2013. Talk to farmers. We know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two.
We are farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Underwritten by Farmers, Truck, Fire Insurance, Exchanges, and Affiliates. Products not available in every state.
Call me, Billy Vigor, at 637-3077 or visit me online, BillyVigorInsurance.com.
If someone was to ask you what sounds better, synthetic or regular, even if you don't know, synthetic always sounds better. The same applies to bowling lanes. What's that? You've never heard of synthetic bowling lanes? Well, Gateway Lanes has just installed synthetic bowling lanes. The same lanes you see the pros bowl on. I could go on, but you need to see these new lanes for yourself. So if you're an avid bowler or even a casual one, you need to experience bowling on a synthetic lane. Stop into Gateway Lanes and experience these new lanes for yourself.
Becoming a mother. It is the most exciting and sometimes the scariest time of your life, all mixed into one. Having the right OB doctor can make all the difference in having it be exciting. We are fortunate to have three great OB doctors in our community with Dr. Bradshaw, Dr. Brady, and Dr. Gagan. So if you are expecting or planning to get pregnant, make an appointment with one of these compassionate doctors. Call 800-424-DOCS. Castleview Hospital, making our community healthier.
You are listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 7:50 with Jordan Buscarini.
Yeah, running down a dream that never would come to me. Running down a dream.
Welcome back to Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. We are live from the Auto Farm Studios. We're going to talk some Major League Baseball. Some sad news earlier in the week on Monday. News broke of the passing of Bill Buckner, who has passed away at the age of 69 after battling dementia. Bill Buckner may in fact be one of the most misunderstood or I guess mislabeled athletes in the history of the game of baseball. And I think that's an appropriate conversation to have on the show today. And joining us to discuss that with us, we have a great friend, Steve Bordstein. He's the host of First Sports on Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico. Steve, as always, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Appreciate the time. Thank you.
As I said, we're talking about Bill Buckner, maybe the most mislabeled player in the history of Major League Baseball. And I don't think that's an overstatement at all.
No, it's not. And, you know, it's easy for us as fans to remain angry at a player, you know, when it's the reminder of something bad happening. You and I are Dodgers fans. I mentioned the name Tom Niedenfuhr. All of a sudden, it conjures up images of the 85 playoffs, Jack Clark hitting a three-run homer to put the Cardinals in the World Series. That happens. Like, we do that. If you're it even happens to people who are not players. All I got to do is mention the name Steve Bartman.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Cubs and the Red Sox have both won World Series since those incidents. But you look at a guy, you can mention Russell Wilson, and it'll conjure up images of Seattle in the Super Bowl. And Bill Buckner's that guy. Bill Buckner is that guy who, unfortunately, doesn't have a highlight resume where you could just click on YouTube and find, oh, Bill Buckner did this wonderful thing, and Bill Buckner did this fantastic thing. He doesn't have that. He was just a steady hitter, a guy who played the Major Leagues for 22 years, but he's remembered for little roller up along first, behind the bag, and the Vin Scully call, we all hear it. And it's unfortunate that that's the play he's remembered for, because the game wasn't law. If he makes the play at first, it's not like the Red Sox would have won the World Series. That game at that point would have been 5-5 going to the 11th. And it was Game 6. There was still one more game in which the Red Sox blew a 3-0 lead in the 6th inning. So it's unfortunate because so many people just know that play and think the Mets won the World Series on that play. No, they didn't win the World Series on that play. There was a whole other game, and it's unfortunate because for years it was just another reminder of that long, frustrating curse of the Red Sox.
Well, and I think, Steve, even taking it a step further, I was blown away at the lack of knowledge that the average baseball fan has on Bill Buckner. Very few people are aware that he really came into his own with the Los Angeles Dodgers before the Dodgers traded him, I believe it was 74 or 75, to the Chicago Cubs. He was a fine player, played 8 seasons with the Cubs, collected over 1,000 hits. He was very good. I think he was a 300 hitter, if memory serves me right, for the Cubs. Made a couple of All-Star appearances as well. And then he went on to the Red Sox when the Red Sox were desperate for first base help. They acquired Buckner in 84. I was blown away at the fact that people are unaware that this guy had a tremendous run in the National League.
Oh, yeah, this guy was tremendous in the National League. He came over the L.A. Dodgers in 1969. Ironically enough, he was a second-round draft pick. And the guy who was drafted ahead of him in the first round was Bobby Valentine, who, of course, is manager of the Mets. It's a tremendous career. Here's another one that bothers me. And this goes back to the All-Star voting. Remember how the All-Star voting, you got that silly ballot, you had to punch the holes in it with the pens or whatever?
Yeah.
Played first base and outfield, so he was never really at one position long enough for anyone to really vote him into an All-Star game. He made the All-Star team once in his entire career. He won one batting title, but here's the numbers on the better side of it. He has more hits lifetime than Ted Williams. In the same time in which he played, only one player had more hits in Bill Buckner's career than Bill Buckner, and that player is Pete Rose. So, I mean, you look at these numbers, and unfortunately, again, he doesn't have that three home run game. I went and looked on YouTube before I did a segment about him on my show this morning, and it's like, oh yeah, there's an inside the park home run that he hit in like a million years ago, and then there's this one game against such and such team, he had seven RBIs. That's really it. Here's another amazing stat, and this is kind of, this kind of goes along with how baseball is today. You mentioned how, you know, it's tough to, you know, analyze players from different generations. There is not one single season in Bill Buckner's career resume, not one, where he struck out more than 40 times in a season. We watch players every day, Jordan, who are striking out 40 times in a month.
Bryce Harper, $300 million man.
Yeah, this guy didn't do it. This guy didn't strike out more than 40 times in a season ever. And so you tie that all in with this one play. And it's unfortunate because he's, and again, you know, was he a glamour player? No, he was just a guy, you know. But it's kind of the opposite effect of Kirk Gibson. I was talking about that this morning. Like, Kirk Gibson was a steady player. He hit home runs, but he was also just a rugged guy. But he'll always be remembered for the home run. You know, he's always remembered for game one. But that home run didn't win the Dodgers the World Series. That win just kind of changed the tune of the World Series. It changed the tide of that World Series because everyone considered the Oakland A's at that time with Mark McGwire, Jose Canseco, the Bash Brothers, to be this unhittable team, and it just changed the course of the World Series. So did Buckner's play, but it didn't cost them the World Series. And that, I think, is the unfortunate part, because when you look at that guy's career, he probably shouldn't have even been out there in the first place. He had a bad back. He was 37 years old. He probably should have been in the dugout at that point. And ironically enough, the guy who should have been at first base in that position, Dodgers manager Dave Roberts.
Yeah, how ironic is that?
And I'm sorry to interrupt. You know who started that game for the Red Sox? That game six, the game six starter at Shea Stadium in New York City, the Red Sox starter that game, Roger Clemens.
Interesting.
I mean, everything about that game, and it's so unfortunate that it's that play, and now we're sitting here talking about Bill Buckner all these years later, and I really want the narrative to not be about that one play, because he was really a really good, good ball player.
You know, though, Steve, I think in going back to some of the iconic plays, think about things, and you mentioned Steve Bartman. That did not lose the Chicago Cubs that series with the Florida Marlins. It did not. That particular play did not win the World Series for the Florida Marlins. But the fact of the matter is, it was the Chicago Cubs. It was in the middle of a curse. They hadn't won a World Series, and at that particular time, I can't even remember how long it was, something like 80-something years. You go back to Buckner, it's with the Boston Red Sox. And I could even throw a positive out there. The NBA, you go back to 1970, and you will see this play over and over again. Jerry West hits a 60-footer to send Game 3 of the NBA Finals into overtime against the Knicks. Well, guess what? The Lakers didn't even win that game. They didn't win that series, right? But we see that play over and over. And I guess it's kind of the story of maybe it's because it's connected to historical franchises. I mean, if Bill Buckner makes this error in the World Series and he plays for the Toronto Blue Jays, are we still talking about it today? I don't think we are.
No, I think a lot of it had to do with the curse. And you're right. I mean, you look at the Steve Bartman thing. If that happens in any other game for any other team that maybe had already won a title the last 10, 15 years, something like that, no. But it is tied into that curse. And thank goodness the Red Sox have won World Series since, right? I mean, because otherwise, the reaction today is much more viral. And I'm sure there's going to be the tributes. I'm sure there would be. But not nearly as many as there would have been. You know, the anger would have been far, far, far more prevalent, you know, if they hadn't won the World Series. But it does bring up how we remember players. And it's ironic because the same weekend over in football, of course, we lost Bart Starr. And no one has a bad word to say about Bart Starr because he's a five-time NFL champion. But he doesn't have that one fumble play. Like, if he doesn't get in from the one-yard line in the Ice Bowl, that's the play we're going to focus on, right? No, because the Packers won Super Bowls. They were a dominant team. But if they hadn't won them, oh, yeah, I guarantee you they're going to show that failed attempt or whatever it was in the Ice Bowl. If that had failed, that would have been the narrative around Bart Starr. It's both unfortunate, and I understand it from the fan perspective, how one play generally defines one person's overall career, both good and bad.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. It really is. And I was trying to wrap my head around this all weekend. You know, is there a specific athlete out there that's going to be remembered, not for a bad incident, because, look, Ron Artest is always going to be remembered for the brawl at the Palace of Auburn Hills, and he should. It was a despicable display. Mike Tyson is going to be known for biting off Evander Holyfield's ear. He probably should. It was absolutely despicable. I'm not talking about events. If we're talking about plays, and let me be clear, there's a big difference between sports. Can you think of another athlete that has a specific play tied to their legacy in a negative way, like Bill Buckner?
The first one that comes to mind, and I don't even know why it came to mind, but as soon as you started the segue, it's Larry Johnson with a timeout, right?
Chris Webber?
Yeah, Chris Webber. I'm sorry. That's mm-hmm. Chris Webber with the timeout.
Okay. Yeah.
One, because how do you not know? How do you not know that situation? I get it. It's instinct. I get that. Okay. So let's throw instinct out for a second. I'm trying to think of one other. That's the one that comes to mind. A dumb one, and I say this only because it's a football thing. The opening play of the Super Bowl loss, Denver versus Seattle. Peyton Manning, the ball goes over his head,
mm-hmm.
and then the wheels just come off the team. Granted, that's the beginning of the game, but it just was this. It just, from everything that happened afterwards, it just spiraled, right?
Right.
Those are the two that come to mind right away. I that's a great question, though.
You know, going back and to the Chris Webber timeout, one of the things again that we have to mention: Michigan's down in that game with 12 seconds.
Right.
They're losing 73-71. North Carolina has all the momentum of the world. Michigan had a chance to win that game, but if you erase the timeout from Chris Webber's legacy, there's no guarantee that Michigan still wins that game. And so I think you can kind of connect the dots to all these plays that these individuals are remembered for in a negative way. Michigan probably loses that game regardless if Chris Webber calls a timeout or not. And again, to be fair, without Chris Webber, Michigan's not in that spot. It's unfair that after everything that he accomplished in the NBA, never won a championship, so I guess we still go back to it. I like that that thought and that comparison a lot.
No, they're great comparisons. I mean, and I think that's what we do. And I think, like, on the flip side of it, you know, as far as the good ones are concerned, I mean, and again, I think the Russell Wilson comparison, I think that one's there. And I don't know if that's more on Russell Wilson or if that's more on Pete Carroll, right? I think you can make that argument that it could be on both of them. If you want to look at the one great play, and again, didn't end the World Series, but Kirk Gibson.
Yeah.
That one play. There's so many that you can go on that end of the spectrum. Christian Laettner, right? The Christian Laettner shot, the pass from Grant Hill. The Michael Jordan shot against the Jazz, right? I mean, that one. Is that the one that's against Utah, I think it is, or Cleveland. I forget who it is, but the shot he makes at the buzzer.
He had one against Cleveland and one against Utah. The one against Utah was in the NBA Finals.
Right, okay, the one against Utah in the NBA Finals. Now, those plays there. Derek Fisher, you know, ending the series against the Spurs. You know, I mean, those are iconic moments, and those are the good side of it. But we remember those with this sense of pride. We remember those with this sense of, oh, wow, these are great moments. I can't tell you how many times in the last 24 hours I've seen the Bill Buckner play at first base.
You know, and I guess kind of rewriting history a bit, you go back to Kobe Bryant's rookie year, he puts up two air balls in an elimination game against the Jazz in the state of Utah. Two air balls as a 19-year-old kid. perhaps we forget about that because he came back and won 5 NBA championships and got better. I don't know. Maybe if Buckner and the Red Sox had won the World Series the following year, maybe we're not talking about it. Maybe if Chris Webber wins an NBA championship, we're not talking about it. I don't know, because Kobe Bryant had it was mind-boggling that he put up two terrible shots that barely drew net in an elimination game, and we really don't talk about that anymore.
Right. And again, I think that's where, as fans, we select, we pick and choose the things we want to remember, right? I mean, as fans, we will look back on an incident. Again, it goes back to, thank God, the Red Sox won a World Series. And I'm so glad that when they did, they reached out to Buckner and said, hey, we want you here. We want you to throw out the first pitch. And I remember the column that Bob Ryan, who at that time was a feature columnist for the Boston Globe, like, he called him a monster after that play.
Unbelievable.
He called him a monster. Okay, I get it. I understand it. But that's going to linger. And one of the clips that I remember from the 30 for 30 special, I believe it was, that ESPN did years later, and you could tell even then that he was starting to, you know, he was starting to go through some of the issues that later on would claim his life with the dementia issues. But he blamed the media. He said it wasn't tough to forgive the fans. It wasn't tough with them. It was tough for him to forgive the media. And I can't imagine going home to something like that. I can't imagine being in New York City, losing that game 6, waking up the next morning, you're 100, you're 200, 300 miles away from Boston, and you see the papers the next day. You see the, you know, you hear about them at least at that time. And they're calling you a monster.
Yeah, I mean, really, just all the way around when you take a look at it. I know that was the story yesterday from the national media, and I'm very appreciative, Steve, of the fact that they downplayed the error and talked a little bit more about Bill Buckner, the player. And I thought last night, Scott Van Pelt, I rarely watch ESPN, but I happened to last night because it popped on right after the Dodgers-Mets game. I thought that Scott Van Pelt had a terrific monologue regarding the career of Bill Buckner.
And that was what I tried to do this morning as well. I do a segment on the show. It's like the morning monologue thing. And I didn't see Scott Van Pelt's piece. I went to sleep after the game was over. But I'll try and check it out today. My thing was, at no point in time am I going to play footage of the monologue. I don't want to play footage of the error. I want to talk about the inside the park home run. I downloaded clips off YouTube, and I downloaded that one. I downloaded the 7 RBI game. I downloaded a game-winning walk-off single that he had. Because that's the Bill Buckner that should be remembered in a tribute piece. When you're doing an obit piece about a celebrity, you don't bring up their worst moment. You just don't do that. And I didn't want to do that this morning, and I'm glad to see that other people are kind of doing that. Again, I understand clickbait. I understand, let's look at the error from 74 different angles, and now with Twitter we can do all sorts of funny images with it. Let's not do that, because this guy was a really good ball player. He was an obvious example of someone who understood forgiveness a little bit, understood his place in history a little bit, and tried to, you know, teach some perspective. And I thought that was really important.
Terrific stuff. Again, Steve Bortstein, he's the host of First Sports on Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico. I will close out this segment with this one stat. And again, for those who will remember Bill Buckner for one of his worst moments as a baseball player, only 5 players from 1972 to 1982 with over 5,000 at-bats had a 300-plus average. Rod Carew, Al Oliver, Pete Rose, Steve Garvey, and Bill Buckner. Pretty elite category, to say the least. Steve, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Weekdays, 7 to 10 a.m. Mountain Time, or 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on Fox AM 1340, 93.9 FM here in New Mexico. We broadcast across the northwest part of the state, and of course, you can also listen online via the iHeartRadio app. You can download that to your smartphone or wireless device, and you can listen to us on our website at foxsports1340.com. Weekday mornings, First Sports, 7 to 10 a.m., and then, of course, on weekends, I host the Fast Track, a nationally syndicated horse racing show. We're a little more than a week and a half away now from the Belmont Stakes, the third and final jewel of racing's Triple Crown, and I host that also on Fox AM 1340, 93.9 FM, also on the website through the iHeartRadio app. You can also follow me on Twitter at Fox 1340 AM.
Steve, it's always a pleasure. Thank you again for the time. I know we'll talk again real soon.
Looking forward to it, my friend. Thank you.
We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return.
Hi, this is Hunter Staniforth with Auto Farm Price Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram. I've been with Auto Farm for over a year and a half now. I've worked in service and am now a part of the outstanding sales team at Auto Farm. With my experience in service, I know the process from the time of the sale all the way through the maintenance of your vehicle. With Auto Farm, we are there for you long after the purchase of your vehicle. Come see me at our original Auto Farm location on Highway 55 next to Sutherland's. Whatever it is you're looking for, I can find it for you.
At Auto Farm, we make it happen for you.
Family outings don't have to be complicated. Make it simple by including KFC in your summer plans this year. Whether you're headed to the mountains or just to the park, plan to stop by KFC for an affordable 8-piece meal deal. It's plenty of food to feed your entire family with juicy, crispy chicken, savory mashed potatoes and gravy, coleslaw and biscuits. One quick and easy stop at KFC and the entire family will be smiling. KFC is keeping the summer picnic tradition alive. Make it part of your family tradition and stop by KFC today.
The King Cole Theater presents Family Nights. That's right. Come see a movie with the whole family every Tuesday at 5:30, and everyone gets in for the matinee price of just $6. This is a great way to get the whole family out together without breaking the bank. Family time is valuable, and the King Cole Theater wants to make it possible. So plan on taking your family to the movie on Tuesdays at 5:30. The same great movies at a matinee price. For movie listings, see their website, pricetheater.com, or call the movie hotline at 650-050.
Are your child's immunizations up to date? At Gagan Family Medicine, they know how important it is to your child's health to make sure they are receiving their vaccinations on the correct schedule. Take a look at your child's record today. If it's time to catch up or if you have questions about what vaccines they need, give Gagan Family Medicine a call today. They are accepting patients in both the Huntington and Price office, and you can get in quickly with a provider to get your child's immunizations on track. Give them a call today at 613-2200.
With four kids and each of them with their own busy schedules, it seems there's never time for date night. So my husband and I started a new tradition, lunch at Big Mo's. Since our schedules revolve around the kids after school, we decided our lunch break is our time to reconnect. And what better place than Big Mo's? Their salads are refreshing and full of flavor. Order a half-pound burger and fresh-cut fries and you'll be full all day. Or how about their delicious sandwiches like turkey bacon avocado or savory French dip? We love Big Mo's and we love our lunch dates. Find them on 700 East Price.
You are listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL, 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. We're going to wrap up the track and field season. We've already talked to Coach Jimmy Jukes of the Carbon Dino Squad, and now we're going to flip and talk to Coach Eric Nielsen of the Emory High School team. And, Coach, it's always a pleasure to get you on. I really appreciate you making time for us again today. Thank you.
Yeah, it's always nice to be on here, Jordan, and get to talk about some of the athletes here.
Yeah, we have a lot of kids doing some amazing things, especially in the track and field season. You and I have talked a lot about Braden Ivey. I know that there was a lot of expectation for him going into the state championship meet this past weekend, and he didn't disappoint. We can start with this, first place in both the 100 and 200 meters.
Yeah, you know, he ran great up there. He actually had a PR in the 100 in the trials on the first day and came home as a state champion two events, and that speaks for itself.
I know, Coach, that there was a little bit of, I guess, holding your breath in that 200 meters as he and Eli Haslett kind of swapped lanes, correct?
Yeah, so it turned out they were assigned, Braden was assigned lane 4 and Eli lane 5. The starting clerk started them in those lanes switched, and so when they finished the race, they finished in the wrong lanes, and so there was a big controversy. We had to try to get that ironed out, but in the end, the games committee decided to let the time stand that they had run, which I think was the right decision.
Definitely. And again, a sigh of relief, I'm sure, from everyone at Emory High.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And you know what, even everybody that was there watching, you know, I talk to people from all over the state. They say how much fun it is to watch him run, and especially in that 200 race. And you know, everybody was kind of upset about some of the controversy going on there.
Outside of Braden in the 100 and 200 meters, Coach, a couple of top finishes for the boys. Second place finish in the 4x400, and this is a second place finish by the smallest of margins.
Oh, yeah, that was a great race. You know, what a great way to end the meet. That was the last event of the day for us, and, you know, it came down to the wire between us and Richfield. Richfield barely edged out there, but that was fun to watch.
And then we get a second-place performance from Keldon Guymon as well in the javelin.
Yeah, and he performed great there. You know, he and Kale made the finals there, and Keldon was able to heave one out there 158 feet to take home second in the jav, so that was great. And then Kale ended up taking fifth in the same event there, so two top finishes.
Yeah, Coach, when you go back and you look at the boys and the way they finished third place overall with 71.5 points, about 25 behind Morgan, 18 behind Grand, a team that you guys did get the best of at the Region 15 Championship. Did this team meet your expectations at the state meet?
Oh, I definitely think so. I think the boys went out there. A couple of them did a little better than expected. A few of them, you know, placed a little lower than I thought they would, but when their times came in, you know, across the board, they all ran some of their best races. Their times were right, what they've been running at the end of the year, and I couldn't be happier with how they performed. And, you know, pretty much everyone we took to the state meet made it onto the podium, came home with a medal. So, you know, it was a great, great meet for Emory High.
Let's flip to the girls' side, Coach. We knew it would be difficult for this team, yet the girls did find a way to secure 5 points. And again, small in numbers. You and I had talked about last week how it has been kind of a down, difficult year for this Lady Spartan team. But still, they registered a few points at the state meet.
Yeah, and it was fun to, you know, those girls earned the right to be there and to be able to compete. We had Whitley Christensen placed in the high jump. I believe she placed fifth, and then a little bit of a surprise, Megan Jensen got 8th place in the javelin throw, threw the best that she has all year, over 101 feet, and, you know, great way to end her season.
Now, Coach, when it's all said and done, and you guys are sitting there cleaning up after a 2-day meet in Provo, with just a number of schools from throughout the entire state representing, what's that feeling like? Is it almost like a sigh of relief, especially dealing with the weather elements and, you know, a little bit of the controversy that you had to deal with in the 200s? Was it kind of a sigh of relief just to get it over with?
You know, it was. And, you know, it's always, there's a lot of nerves going into the state meet, and then you have this controversy going on, and it's a big meet, a lot of people there. It is nice to get it over with. It's nice to see how the athletes performed and, you know, really be able to feel good about how they performed. I know the boys were a little disappointed. They thought, you know, they would be bringing home a trophy from the state meet, too. A little bit of disappointment there, but, you know, I'm not disappointed in their performance. I think everything turned out great for us.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Eric Nielsen of the Emory High School track and field team. Coach, if we recap the entire season, you know, you go back to the beginning meet. I know that it was a little bit different at the beginning because the weather was so sluggish. Maybe it warms up a bit in the middle of the season, but then we jump back into the sluggish weather. From a boys' perspective, all in all, 2019 seemed like it was just a fantastic year, which, again, it includes a Region 15 championship.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we go through the season, and with track, you kind of have kids come and go. They're trying things, and a lot of them don't stick it out to the end. And, you know, the boys that stuck it out to the end, great meet. I think we finished first or second in every meet we went to throughout the year. It was kind of, you know, we seemed to be right behind Grand all year. We hit Region 15. We're able to come out on top of Grand, bring home a trophy there, and top three finish at state. I don't think going into the season we could ask for anything better.
Well, if we flip and talk about the girls' side, Coach, again, mentioning that it was a little bit of a difficult season, is that all geared around the numbers, the amount of female athletes that are participating in track, or what do you contribute kind of a down year in that realm to?
Well, a lot of it is numbers. You know, we finished the season with very few numbers in the girls. But we actually had several more athletes that were injured throughout the season and weren't ever able to make a recovery to come back before region and state. And I really think the girls had some potential to do a lot better this year, finish, you know, more in the middle of the pack if a couple of those key athletes weren't injured. Really helps with some relays. I mean, we were one away, really, from having really good relays in the girls. Then we're able to qualify more girls at state that way and different things, too. So, numbers, definitely we need more girl numbers to be competitive, but, you know, just one or two really would make a big difference.
Yeah, Coach, what do you tell the kids as far as the off season goes? Track and field, I know, is so much different, especially with the coming in the spring. So we have, you know, fall and winter sports before we dive back into track and field. What do you coaches tell the kids as far as, you know, how to maintain what they picked up on over the last few months?
You know, just stay active, really. Stay active in the summer. Get involved in other sports. Being involved in sports in the fall and in the winter, that helps you, you know, stay in shape, maybe a little different kind of shape, but keep your lungs. And then, you know, that's the biggest thing I want to do, just be involved, go out, be involved, do something, be active. And then when we hit spring again, we're able to kind of fine-tune them, get them into track shape, and then progress through the season.
If we're talking about fall sports, is cross country the one that I guess most closely correlates to track and field, Coach?
Yeah, I think it probably does. Especially for our distance runners, that, you know, that really is able to keep them in their tip-top shape. And if they're involved in that, they're running all summer, being on a team. And as we know, the Emory boys have been in the top two the last several years in the cross country at state. So that's a good thing for them. But, you know, I encourage them to do football, you know, basketball in the winter. We have several boys that are involved in those things. And you know, anything like that would be good for them.
I know it's a long ways off, but it will be here before we know it. If we talk about the 2020 season, Coach, coming back next year, at least what's expected, what do you see happening with this boys' team coming into next year?
You know, we've got several seniors this year that performed great. They placed well at state. Keldon Guyman, Kale Allred, Mason Famalo. We had Chase Christiansen and McKay Macarello that were seniors. Trying to think, I might be missing one or two others. You know, so that's going to hurt to lose them. But coming back next season, we've got, I think we've got a lot of potential next year. And as I look at it, we've really got someone in every event that will be able to go to the state meet and place high, you know, top three places. And then some incoming freshmen, you know, throw those in, those athletes into a few of these places that I hope is out to. So I think coming into next year, this team has a lot of potential to make another run.
Well, Coach, it is always fun to get you on. Doesn't matter if we're talking soccer or if we're talking track and field. I always enjoy the conversation, and I'm always very appreciative of you making time for us here on the show. So thank you so much, and again, congratulations on a 2019 well-played season.
Thanks so much, Jordan.
We've got to pause for just a moment, but when we return, we'll move over to the national sports scene. We'll be joined by Marty Brenneman. He's been the voice of the Cincinnati Reds for 45 years, and he is in the middle of his final season before he hangs it up. I'm really looking forward to this one. It's coming up next. Marty Brenneman here on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
This is Dr. Kelly Jensen of High Desert Orthopedics. I know that a quickly treated sports-related injury will heal faster and get your athlete back in the game sooner and healthier. That is why my staff at High Desert Orthopedics is committed to making sure your injury is assessed and treated started within 24 hours of when you contact my office in almost all situations. So if your athlete needs treatment, call High Desert Orthopedics at 637-BONE. High Desert Orthopedics, the best care your athlete deserves.
There are a million reasons to smile. You just landed that big promotion, seeing an old friend, getting a great report card, or how about braces from Hillstead Orthodontics? Let Hillstead's experienced, friendly staff help you smile ear to ear. Hillstead Orthodontics offers a free consultation, affordable payment plans, and they accept most insurance plans. You deserve to have the smile you've always dreamed of, and it's within your reach with help from Hillstead Orthodontics. Give them a call today at 637-2222 and schedule your free consultation today.
Is your smart TV smarter than you? Or how about all those devices and streaming options? It all seems a little complicated, right? Actually, it's easier than you think. Emory Telcom is here to help. Their trained professionals will come to your house free of charge and help you set up your new streaming devices and show you how to use all those devices and apps. Watching your favorite shows just got a whole lot easier with Emory Telcom. Give them a call today at 613-9605. Let Emory Telcom hook you up.
Getting hurt at work isn't anybody's goal, but it happens. If you do get hurt at work, tell your supervisor, see a doctor, and make sure you ask for a referral to Castle View Physical Therapy. When you get injured at work, you need the best treatment possible so you can return to health and to work. The proper physical therapy treatment after an injury is crucial to ensure you are properly healed and ready to return to work without risk of re-injury. Come see the expert team at Castle View Physical Therapy. They are your best return to work plan.
Attention history buffs, you're going to want to listen up. Have you heard of the Eastern Utah Tourism and History Association? They're only the best and most accurate source for local and regional tourist and history information. Whether you're researching a specific event or just want to know more about our local history, they're your source. With fun interactive tours, books, and even a rotating museum that's coming soon, Eastern Utah Tourism and History Association is where it's at for accurate information about the place we call home. Find them on First North and Carbon Avenue or visit their website, EUTHA.org for more information.
You are listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 7:50, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
Welcome back to Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM live from the Auto Forum Studios. Really excited about our next guest. This is going to be a fun conversation. Author Michael Cranish. His latest work is called The World's Fastest Man, The Extraordinary Life of Cyclist Major Taylor. And if you're unfamiliar with Major Taylor, you're going to get a history lesson. He was America's first black sports hero. And the name has held up in the world of cycling. This is a very interesting book, and again, joining us right now over the phone, we have Michael Cranish. Michael, a pleasure to get you on the show today. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I find this extremely interesting. The name Major Taylor probably doesn't strike a whole lot of recognition with the average or maybe even some of the diehard sports fans. That's why I find this piece so interesting. So my first question for you is, where did the inspiration for this work come from?
Well, Major Taylor was, as the subtitle says, the first American sports hero. He, in 1899, won national championships, was declared the world's fastest man, and then the world championship that same year. So he, before Jack Johnson was the world heavyweight boxing champion, Jesse Owens was in the Olympics, before Jackie Robinson broke the color line of Major League Baseball, Major Taylor led the way. He paved the way, not just because he was competing and winning in the most popular sport of its time, more popular than baseball, for example, but also because he used his winnings to try to disprove the racist theories of the day. He really was, to look back at the many hundreds of stories written about him at the time, late 1800s, early 1900s, he was really an icon to African Americans. He was disproving time and again by beating the best white athletes in the world that if a black was given a chance to compete equally and fairly, that he could succeed, and that's the message that Major Taylor wanted to bring, that if he could do what he did in athletics, that any black American could be successful in any human endeavor, as he put it in his autobiography. He wanted to set not just for his own glory set records, but to show and disprove the worst and most heinous racist theories of the time.
One of the things I wanted to touch on with you, and unfortunately I have not been able to read the book yet. In fact, I just received the copy today. But Major Taylor was a guy that intellectually was on a different level, right? And is this something that you touch on in the book? I mean, from a mind standpoint, and maybe this had a lot to do with his athletic ability, he really was on a different level.
He was. He didn't, in education, he wanted to go to high school. He wasn't allowed for racist reasons. He wanted to go to college. Same thing. But he was very well-read. He wrote an autobiography. He wrote, if you read the letters he wrote to his wife, they're available for 1 year that still exist. You see what an extraordinary literate man he was. He was way ahead of his time in many areas. He studied the science of nutrition. He studied the science of physiology. He became what he said he needed to be in perfect form and condition to beat the greatest white athletes of the day, or any black athletes for that matter. And that's what he did. He put a photo in his autobiography that shows him to be an extraordinarily fit person. He was only 5'7". At his racing best, he was in the 140s. And yet, in the sprinting category that he competed in, typically sprinters were much bigger and heavier individuals. Major Taylor, in 1896, competed in Madison Square Garden in his first professional race, was put against the best sprinters in the world in a preliminary match. He won that and sort of put him on the national stage. International press was there. And here he was just 6 months after the infamous ruling of Plessy versus Ferguson by the Supreme Court that said separate but equal. Well, he was given an equal chance to compete against anybody else in the world, and he won. And then he competed in an inhumane contest called the six-day race, where you raced around an oval for 6 days straight, and you got an hour rest here or there, and he survived. Many riders had to drop out. It was such a difficult race, and in fact, that type of race was later banned by Theodore Roosevelt, who became governor of New York. He went on to then win many, many contests. White riders tried to ban him for Jim Crow reasons, whether because they feared that he would beat them. And it was extraordinary what he was able to accomplish under these incredibly difficult conditions. He became a sensation. I describe him in the book as one of the most chronicled African-American individuals of his day, which, since most people never heard of him, is incredible to think about. But cycling at the time was the most popular sport, more so than baseball, like I mentioned. So he was widely watched. The African-American press gave him countless adulations, ended up going on to Europe and to Australia to compete and become a champion. So there is no video of him today, no live film that shows him in action, but many great photographs that were taken of him that give you a sense of who he was and how he was able to compete. And the story really bears relevance today, because the racism he faced, while it's not the same kind of level of racism today, there's plenty of racism, unfortunately, today that is still prevalent. So understanding his story, that's what he wanted. He wrote an autobiography so that people could remember what happened and realize what he had to do. But what he showed in his perseverance against adversity is a lesson that still really resonates today.
Again, our guest right now is Michael Cranish. He's the author of the new book, The World's Fastest Man, The Extraordinary Life of Cyclist Major Taylor, America's First Black Sports Hero. Michael, you did mention Jack Johnson, Jesse Owens, Jackie Robinson. Those are names that just resonate with sports. I'm a big boxing guy myself, so I know Jack Johnson inside and out. I love baseball. I'm very familiar with Jackie Robinson. Everyone's familiar with Jesse Owens. Why is it that Major Taylor's name has not, I don't want to say stood the test of time, but why is it not mentioned, or at least as recognizable as the three names I just went over, Jack Johnson, Jesse Owens, and Jackie Robinson?
It should be. Part of it may be that cycling, you know, had a huge moment of glory. There were velodromes around the country that typically drew 10, 15, 20,000 people. At the time, this was speed. This was an era of relatively few automobiles and millions of bicycles. The bicycle manufacturing companies got huge numbers of patents that were then translated into the auto business. So at the time, it was enormous. That sport has faded, certainly, in this country. We don't have the same kind of film we have of him, of the other athletes that you mentioned. But I'll tell you an anecdote about Jack Johnson, since you mentioned you know the sport of boxing so well. 1908, Jack Johnson did become the heavyweight boxing champion. Well, initially, Jack Johnson wanted to be a cyclist. He wanted to emulate Major Taylor. So he cycled. He went in matches. And one day he was seriously injured on the track, and he was hospitalized. And he later said that at that point he realized that he needed to participate in a less dangerous sport than cycling, so he became a boxer. That's, of course, incredible to think about, because we think of boxing as such a dangerous sport in and of itself. But 11 of Taylor's competitors on the cycling track were killed in various injuries. They went around sort of similar to motorcycles. They're called the motocycles. They were ginned up bicycles with gigantic engines on them. They were very dangerous to race behind. People would get their legs seriously injured and have to have amputations. Some died. It was extremely dangerous. Taylor was severely injured numerous times, concussions. There was a three-year period where he said he had a near-nervous breakdown because things were so difficult. There were the physical injuries, but there were also the psychic abrasions. He carried on his shoulders really much of the aspirations of his race. He felt that if he lost, people would look down on his race. If he won, people would realize that the racist theories about blacks would be proven untrue. So he felt every race he was running, he needed to win on behalf of so many people. And that put a lot of pressure on him. But he lived up to that by becoming the national and international champion.
I know that Major Taylor kind of started out as a bike mechanic, correct?
Well, he worked in a bicycle store. So there he might have done some mechanics. But there was another individual who helped him, who ran a bicycle manufacturing company, who gave him a sort of state-of-the-art bike. I should mention, since you're in Utah, is that correct?
Correct.
That Taylor's last professional race actually was run in Salt Lake City. He wanted to have one last comeback in 1910, I believe it was. So after being so successful around the world, he came back to Utah. He was competing against some of his greatest nemesis there in Salt Lake City, which had a huge, very popular velodrome. First, it was, I think it was right by the original Salt Palace, if I recall correctly. He didn't do successfully. That was the end of his career, essentially. But as it happens, his career did end there professionally in Salt Lake City.
Michael Cranish, again, talking about his new book, The Extraordinary Life of Cyclist Major Taylor, America's First Black Sports Hero. It's called The World's Fastest Man. Michael, I know your time is short. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about the book and where you can find it.
Sure. The book's available, really. It should be at any bookstore. It came out about a week ago, and Amazon, the usual places. It's published by Scribner, so should be widely available, and it was great to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely, Michael. Thank you again for the time, and best of luck moving forward with the world's fastest man. I definitely enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Again, that's Michael Cranish, author of the new book, The World's Fastest Man, The Extraordinary Life of Cyclist Major Taylor, who was America's first black sports hero. We've had some fun conversations with authors on the show, and I'll tell you, this is actually one of the, my favorite books that I have received. I got a copy of it sitting right in front of me right now as we speak. A phenomenal, phenomenal work by Michael Cranish. I highly recommend it. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll move over to talk NBA basketball right after this.
Is your smart TV smarter than you? Or how about all those devices and streaming options? It all seems a little complicated, right? Actually, it's easier than you think. Imry Telcom is here to help. Their trained professionals will come to your house free of charge and help you set up your new streaming devices and show you how to use all those devices and apps. Watching your favorite shows just got a whole lot easier with Imry Telcom. Give them a call today at 613-9605. Let Imry Telcom hook you up.
Hi, this is Hunter Staniforth with Auto Farm Price Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram. I've been with Auto Farm for over a year and a half now. I've worked in service and am now a part of the outstanding sales team at Auto Farm. With my experience in service, I know the process from the time of the sale all the way through the maintenance of your vehicle. With Auto Farm, we are there for you long after the purchase of your vehicle. Come see me at our original Auto Farm location on Highway 55 next to Sutherland's. Whatever it is you're looking for, I can find it for you.
At Auto Farm, we make it happen for you.
If someone was to ask you what sounds better, synthetic or regular, even if you don't know, synthetic always sounds better. The same applies to bowling lanes. What's that? You've never heard of synthetic bowling lanes? Well, Gateway Lanes has just installed synthetic bowling lanes. The same lanes you see the pros bowl on. I could go on, but you need to see these new lanes for yourself. So if you're an avid bowler or even a casual one, you need to experience bowling on a synthetic lane. Stop into Gateway Lanes and experience these new lanes for yourself.
Summer is just around the corner, and Sutherland's has everything you need. After you mow the lawn, trim the hedges, and till your garden, where you put all that stuff? Compliment the hard work you put into your lawn or garden with a new storage shed from Sutherland's. Our build-it-yourself shed kits come in a variety of sizes and styles at prices you can't turn down. Plus, with any shed purchase, you'll receive a free $50 promo card. See store for details. Sutherland's, helping you build it better.
Sutherland's, warehouse prices, hometown service.
A
accounting, agribusiness, business administration.
USU Eastern now offers 24 bachelor degree programs right here at our local campus.
English teaching, elementary education, family life studies, health education and promotion, history, human development and family studies, liberal arts, management information systems, marketing, mathematics education, psychology, recreation resource management.
Visit usueastern.edu for more information. USU Eastern, small enough to care, big enough to get you places.
Serving all of Eastern Utah, this is News Talk 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. KOAL. Price.